One of the things I like to do in my shows is complain, you know? It's kind of a motif for me, complaining. And, of course, this weird culture we live in leaves you no shortage of things to complain about. So this next piece of material, like most good ideas, is fairly simple. It's just a list of people who ought to be killed. Okay?
Whoa. Hold on, that's messed up.
Well, sort of. But I still think it's pretty funny. The clip you just heard is from George Carlin's 2001 special, Complaints and Grievances, and it's a prime example of the kind of humor we're going to be talking about today.
That is, humor about death.
Hi, I'm Zaytoun Ahmed.
And I'm Patrick Liu. You're listening to Radioactive, KBOW's youth radio program.
Just a quick warning before we start. We're going to be talking about when it's appropriate to joke about death, and you're going to be hearing some of those morbid jokes today, as well as some strong language. This content may not be appropriate for sensitive listeners.
We're not trying to tell people they should not be offended by this joke or that routine, but we do think this is an important discussion to have.
Because we as humans love to laugh. We use humor in a variety of different ways, and sometimes that means joking about a subject that's not necessarily funny, such as death.
The benign violation theory of humor can help us explain why that's the case. Basically, this theory states that an unsettling situation, like death, creates humor if the listener is not actually in danger. Maybe that's why people enjoy jokes about death.
Of course, the benign violation theory also explains why in or after dangerous situations, victims of that event are less likely to find jokes about that event funny. We'll definitely return to the benign violation theory again later in this episode.
Now, before we dive too deep into humor and death, we need to make one distinction clear. Jokes about death can really be found in two forms, the abstract and the concrete. And the abstract is much less taboo in modern comedy.
Abstract jokes are like the tweets from Kim Kardashian, a Twitter account that combines the quotes of Kim Kardashian with the sayings of Soren Kierkegaard, the first existentialist philosopher.
And often, that combination ironically trivializes death. For example, take this tweet from August 9th, 2016. Obsessed with protecting your skin, lips, hair, and face from the sun, close the cover of the coffin tight, really tight, and be at peace. I love that.
Me too. Abstract jokes like this one poke fun at the scary concept of our inevitable doom, and in doing so, help us overcome our fears. That's why abstract jokes about death are usually pretty acceptable.
But when people joke more concretely about death, that's when things get more controversial. And because of that, we're going to spend the rest of this episode exploring concrete jokes about death.
We'll examine what circumstances made certain jokes appropriate or inappropriate in the public eye, and we'll use examples that become more and more controversial.
Now, what we mean by a concrete joke about death is a joke that references the actual death of a person or a group of people. And sometimes there are first historical tragedies, like 9/11, for example. Because it's highly taboo, and rightly so, you rarely hear a joke about the incident. But when you do, people usually respond with, "too soon." So if time is the main issue that determines whether or not a joke is appropriate, when is too soon?
That's a good question. They say that comedy is tragedy plus time, but exactly how much time is hard to tell. Researchers from the University of Colorado Boulder found out that a joke about Hurricane Sandy was found funniest 36 days after the event. But the researchers themselves say the number cannot be applied to other tragedies.
Maybe, for catastrophes of a greater scale, jokes about the events don't start getting more appropriate until 3 or 4 generations afterward. After that amount of time has passed, the public gets less sensitive to the topic. That would explain why people seem totally fine when comedians began making fun of the Spanish Inquisition.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition!
You just heard a clip from the famous Spanish Inquisition parody from an episode of Monty Python's Flying Circus that was released in 1970. the real Spanish Inquisition, which likely resulted in the deaths of 3,000 to 5,000 people, ended in 1834. So it seems like 136 years was enough time for the pain of the event to die down. Enough that Monty Python could make fun of it without backlash.
Backlash? The parody is a meme. In fact, it became a running gag in Monty Python. By the way, these guys weren't the only comedians to poke fun at the Spanish Inquisition. In his 1981 film titled History of the World Part 1, Mel Brooks portrayed the event through a merry musical number.
The Inquisition.
Let's begin.
The Inquisition.
Look out, Sam.
We have a mission to convert the Jews.
Oh my God. It sounds all lively now and you're laughing. But later they talk about torturing and slaughtering people.
Nevertheless, these parodies of the Spanish Inquisition got a lot of praise. I guess it's as they say, time's the best medicine.
Not exactly. I mean, you wouldn't be okay with it if I said 3,000 to 5,000 people were likely executed during the Spanish Inquisition. Ha 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 ha. So apparently, time isn't the only factor that determines if concrete jokes are appropriate. So there has to be something special about the content of these jokes.
Yeah, it's the absurdity. The musical dance number, the vibrant red outfits, the nuns later doing synchronized swimming. The comedians joke about death and tragedy, but their purpose is to make the perpetrators seem super ridiculous.
Exactly. It's satire. And that's what makes these jokes valuable. By mocking the perpetrators of the event, we take away their power to incite fear.
Note that these parodies do not mock the serious issue of the Spanish Inquisition itself. They only mock the people who created it.
A YouTuber named Veneloid made a video titled In Defense of Dark Humor, where he explains this difference.
You can laugh at a joke built around an idea while still understanding that the idea on its own is serious and not to be laughed at in and of itself. In other words, the joke structure is different from the idea that it's built on, and we're laughing at the former, not the latter.
That may work for the Spanish Inquisition parodies, but I'm not sure if it works the same way for comedians like George Carlin.
In some of his bits, death is the joke, not the idea. Let's give an example. At the beginning of this podcast, we played a clip from Carlin's 2001 special, Complaints and Grievances, where he runs through a list of people he finds annoying, or again, as he likes to call it,
the list of people who ought to be killed.
He then goes through the list, and every time he introduces a new group, he returns to the same morbid joke.
There are some more people with missing chromosomes who ought to be thrown screaming from a helicopter.
Well, I think the joke structure is pretty clear. Carlin satirizes annoying people and exaggerates his hatred for them. The audience is laughing at the hyperbole. And I think it's safe to assume the audience doesn't actually expect or want Carlin to kill these people.
I'm sure that's the case. But the problem here is that Carlin's hyperbole is death. When he exaggerates, he says that he wants people to die. Which means, isn't the audience laughing and cheering at the prospect of death? Why? Why do they find this funny?
Well, we might be able to find an answer to that question in the benign violation theory, which we defined earlier. As a reminder, the theory states that we find humor in stressful situations if we feel safe from the danger.
If this theory holds up, then Carlin is capitalizing on that stress and pushing people to the edge of their comfort zones. The audience finds his morbid descriptions of murder funny because they themselves are safe.
But wait. People didn't always feel safe enough to hear his comedy. Carlin once had to shelve his material because of that.
In late 2016, a Carlin routine was posthumously released. It was actually recorded the day before 9/11, but after the tragedy, Carlin decided not to release it because people didn't feel safe at the time. So he held onto the record until he died in 2008.
The record was called I Kinda Like It When a Lot of People Die. And he joked casually about mass fatalities.
You know the best thing I can hear on television?
We interrupt this program. You know the worst thing I can hear? No one was hurt. No one was hurt. I get depressed, you know? Because I'm always rooting for a really high death toll. That's why I like the natural disasters, the big natural disasters that no one can control. Tornado, hurricane, earthquake. Tornadoes are great because there's hardly any warning, you know? So you can get in there and fucking nail some people in their sleep.
So is that when jokes about death are inappropriate? When they violate the rules of the benign violation theory?
Yeah, of course. That's the extreme case. If you tell a morbid joke and no one finds it funny, certainly there's something wrong. But many people would probably find Carlin's jokes too disturbing, even if it wasn't right after 9/11.
Yeah, and many would find it completely okay. At this point, when it comes to Carlin's type of humor, I think appropriateness is completely subjective. On one hand, you could argue that when death itself becomes the joke, Carlin's humor becomes purposeless and inappropriate. But you could also argue that, in context, it's totally appropriate. Comedians are doing their job of being funny, and their style appeals to a specific audience who will stick around for certain types of jokes.
There's a kind of comedic license, then, that gives comedians the freedom to explore topics that cater to their audience. For Carlin, that means that he gets to be as dark or gruesome as he wants, as long as he has an audience who wants to hear it.
Basically, there's a time and place for everything. We talked to Fern Perlstein, who directed The Last Laugh, a documentary about whether or not it's okay to make jokes about the Holocaust. She said,
I think comedians are given greater freedom because of that's what they do, and that's what people know that they do. You know, I mean, other people can tell a joke and it's considered funny, but it doesn't mean, you know, like I said, it may offend somebody, you know, in a group of people. If a non-Jewish person were to tell a Holocaust joke to a group of Jewish people, it might make them uncomfortable.
So what makes a joke about death appropriate?
According to Fern, anyone who wants to make a joke about death should take into account two things about the social situation. One, if their own background permits them to cover the subject, and two, if their audience is comfortable hearing it from them.
And if we combine that information with what we establish for ourselves, this is what we get. The appropriateness of a joke about death is reliant on its timeliness, content, and purpose, as well as a careful consideration of who's talking and who's listening.
But there's one more important thing about jokes on death that we haven't covered yet, and that is their potential to be valuable. For instance, earlier, we talked about how dark humor can be valuable when we use it to mock the perpetrators of a catastrophe. Comedian Sarah Silverman explains why this is important in The Last Laugh.
Comedy puts light onto darkness, you know, and darkness can't live where there's light. So that's why it's important to talk about things that are taboo, because otherwise they just stay in this dark place and they become dangerous.
This can be exceptionally necessary for those dealing with trauma. For example, prisoners in the Holocaust often used humor to get them through their hardships. Here's what Fern has to say about that.
I think that humor and comedy and laughing are so incredibly important to our psyches, you know. I think so many different things. I think it's a release, but I also think that humor is vital as a political tool, as a tool to discuss difficult topics, to put them in perspective. So to me personally, you know, it's crucial.
In moments of despair, being able to laugh in the face of death gives us a little reprieve. It's the same concept behind hashtag laugh at death, a public awareness campaign started in May 2017 by the Indian Association of Palliative Care. Its aim is to help terminally ill patients laugh at death.
The association brought together patients, their families, and comedians to help them open up about their fears about death. And then the terminally ill patients made their own stand-up routine for their families, with jokes like this.
We are six sisters. See, I'm the fourth one. And after my three sisters expired, I become the eldest one now. So now I feel that I got a promotion. I'm promoted. And now my younger sisters are, I think, waiting to be promoted.
So even though joking about death is usually taboo and controversial behavior, how we go about discussing death says a lot about us as human beings.
Again, we have no intention of telling people what they should or shouldn't find appropriate when it comes to joking about death. But hopefully, In guiding this discussion about dark humor and its usage, we've helped you understand that there's a variety of ways to go about it. And they're not always bad.
Thank you to director Fern Perlstein for contributing to today's discussion on humor and tragedy. Her documentary, The Last Laugh, is available for viewing on PBS.
Also, huge thanks to all of the people who made this podcast possible. Our editor, Lila Katayev, and our podcast mentor, Surya Hendry.
As well as to the other Radioactive program heads, Jenny Asarno and Mary Heisey.
And thanks to the other Radioactive participants, as well as all of you, our listeners.
Check back next week on kuow.org/radioactive for more great content. And be sure to track us down on social media. We're KOW Radioactive, one word, on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find us on Facebook as Radioactive Youth Media.
Signing off, this is Zaytoun Ahmed.
And I'm Patrick Liu. Thank you for listening to this week's Radioactive Podcast.